Good morning and welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be learning together Divrei Hayomim Beis Perek Chof Dalet, the 24th chapter of the second book of Divrei Hayomim. What is fascinating about this perek is it is about the life and times of Yoash of the south. There was another Yoash in the north, but that's not going to be our focus right now. Our perek is 27 psukim long and it is found as a parallel parasha to Melachim Beis Perek Yud Beis. Although the stories differ somewhat here and there. Our introduction, psukim, are 1 and 2, Aleph and Beis, where we're told that at 7 years old, Yoash becomes a king, and he rules for 40 years in Yerushalayim. We hear that his mother's name is Tzivya, from Be'er Sheva, and in general, he does the good and the right in the eyes of Hashem all the time of Yehoyada, which already gives us a little bit of a shadow, knowing that things are going to be a little more complex. Why is it that he becomes king at 7 years? Well, we know that Yehoyada made him king at 7 years. Why did Yehoyada wait until then? The Chidah suggests that the reason is because every 7 years they would clean out the rooms in the Beis HaMikdash, and that's where he was hiding. He was hiding in one of the rooms above the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and so he would have been discovered, which is why he was forced to do that then. Another possibility is because at 7 years old is a certain basic level of das, of knowledge that a child attains, and that's what he was waiting for. So now we hear about one of the, well, called hallmark moves that Yoash makes. And this is from Psukim Gimel to Yodalet. In this section, we hear about the fact that he wants to revamp the Beis HaMikdash. So we hear that Yehoyada marries two wives, whether it means Yehoyada married for himself two wives, which is against the rules of the Kohen Gadol, or whether it means that he got two wives to marry for to Yoash, a matter of discussion in the Mefarshim. But at this point, Yoash decides L'chadesh es Beis Hashem, to renew the house of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what does he do? He gathers together all the Kohanim, the Levim, and he goes out and he tells them to go to all the different cities and go and collect the money. He says, hurry to do this. But it turns out, they were not in such a rush to get all this money together. So he calls them together and he reprimands them. Why didn't you go and do this? And so he changes and he goes and he points out, you know, Ataliyahu, his grandmother, did all this Hamirshas, this terrible woman. They broke the base of Migdash and they destroyed the Kodesh Hashem. They made all these Baal worship areas. So instead he decided that he changed policy and he made a large aron, a large box outside the base of Migdash, which had a slot or a hole, and people would come and bring in their masas, their the gifts that they were supposed to be preparing, like Moshe Rabbeinu had required. So we were talking about the Machtzis HaShekel, which everybody would do this. Everybody was very happy with this policy, and the Aron became quickly filled up. And we're told about how he counts up all the money, and he is able to make an accounting for all the money that comes in, and he uses the money to go and rent those who quarry rock and get the special stones and silver. And we hear about all the different things that he's able to do with this. He gets iron and copper to strengthen in the house and to make it more beautiful, and he essentially vatal arucha. He really heals the Beis HaMikdash for in this time. We're using this budget, and he uses the rest of the money for the kelim, for the different vessels to be used in the Beis HaMikdash. A very beautiful description, and it describes how the Beis HaMikdash was functional all the days of Yehoyada, the Kohen Gadol. So, just a quick question. How long has it been since the completion of the Beis HaMikdash until now, of the revamping of it? So the Rashi does the calculation and it says 125 years. Rashi also points out that the next time this is going to be revamped is in times of Yoshio HaMelech, which is 199 years into the future. Which means that technically speaking, this is a little bit earlier than the mileage that in which the Beis HaMikdash would need to have be fixed, because it can really go for 200 years before the next revamp. So the reason why it's necessary now is because of the destruction caused by Ataliyahu, which is why it's being emphasized in this as well. If you put the Melachim version of the story side by side with the Divrei Hayomim version, you'll notice that there are a number of discrepancies, and the Malbim suggests that the way to resolve these discrepancies is the following. The collection that was being done in Melachim was not so much about revamping the Beis HaMikdash, but rather about getting the Kohanim Gedolim, the Kohanim and the Levim, to do the Bedek Habayis, which means upkeep. So how did he do it there? He incentivized them by saying, well, you collect the money, you use the amount for the Nedarim and Nedavos, which are the voluntary sacrifices which they, the Kohanim and the Levim, have a section in, have a benefit from, and the rest of the money would be used to revamp the house. However, the Kohanim and the Levim pocketed their money and were not listening. That's what's happening over there, and that's what he was dealing with in Melachim. But here, it's not about actually upkeep, it's actually about renewal. This is a separate renewal, and that's why the Malbim points out there was actually separate boxes. The box that's described for collection in Melachim is the box of collection for the upkeep and the karbonos and the bedakabayas. And this one is about the renewal, which was a box outside. Fascinating as well. Why was there not hurrying? The Levium also displayed a lack of alacrity in this case over here. So Rashi pointed out there was no self-interest here. Meaning, why would they want to rush and hurry? In addition, the Malbim explains that he was also looking for arrears. He was looking for the previous years of the 6 years of Ataliyahu, where she had not collected money for the Beis HaMikdash. So Yoash was demanding 6 years worth of missed funding for the Beis HaMikdash, and that people were not so excited to do, and the Levium were not so excited to collect for as well. Okay, at which point we're told in the Psukim from Tezvov to Tezzayin that Yehoyada became very old. How old? Well, the Psukim tell us 130 years when he died, and he was so great and he achieved so much in his life that he was buried with the kings. Why? Because he did Tovah b'Yisrael v'im Elokim u'beisoyin with Hashem and his house. And the Mefarshim point out that he essentially carried on the Malchus based of it by the fact that he was able to kill Ataliyahu and bring restitution by putting Yoash on the throne. That essentially was the chain of Malchus went through him and because of him, which is why he was buried with the kings. Unfortunately, afterwards we hear from Psukim Yud Zayin to Yotess that there was a sin, and that the Sarei Yehuda come and bow down in front of the officers, and the chieftains come in front of Yoash, and he listened to them, and in fact they left the words of Hashem and they started serving Asherah and Atzebim, all kinds of different deities, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was very upset about them, so he sent Neviim to bring them back and they didn't listen. Well, just before we go further, what was it that they said? Well, what could they have convinced Yoash? I mean, Yoash was brought up on the lap of Yehoyada the Kohen Gadol. What could have gone wrong? So Rashi explains that they were very clever. What they did is they said, look, you grew up, you essentially had 6 years living above the Kodesh HaKodashim, between above the Aron of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ark of the Covenant. So you yourself must be so holy and so special that you deserve service yourself. Meaning to say, this is an extension of self-deification, which they were convincing him of. And it's very hard for somebody to escape such a thing. Meaning, if they were to tell him, serve Avodah Zarah on the outside, he would have been able to withstand that. But to say that you yourself are so special, you deserve service, that kind of flattery, unfortunately, did succeed. Now we hear about a terrible incident that happens. Psukim Chof to Chof Beis, we hear about how Zechariah, the son of Yehoyada, now carries the mantle of his father and he rebukes the people. And he says to him, this is what Hashem told you. Why are you transgressing the mitzvahs of Hashem? You're not going to success. You left Hashem. Hashem will leave you. They weren't so happy with that kind of rebuke. They weren't so happy with the rabbi was telling them that time. But this time, it wasn't that they just left the membership of this particular Mikdash. What they did was they actually rebelled against him and stoned him to death right there in the base of Mikdash. And it says, B'mitzvah Samelech, with the command of the king, whether that means that Yoash commanded this or allowed it to happen. Nonetheless, the Psukim make a very chilling notification here. Lo zochar Yoash HaMelech haChesed asher aso Yehoyada aviv imoy. And thereby he forgot the kindness that Yehoyada did to him by allowing the death and by essentially causing the death of Zechariah. And therefore, and as he died, he said, Yere Hashem v'yidrosh. As the lifeblood was sapped out of Zechariah, he calls out, let Hashem seek out my blood. And that's what happens. In the end, we hear from Sukim Chof Gimel to Chof Dalet, we hear about, at the end of the year, how Hazael, the king of Aram, the armies of Aram, not Hazael himself, come and surround Yerushalayim, and they take back all the different spoils to Damascus. And at which point they injure the king terribly because he left HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we hear the last psukim of the Perek, now from Chafei to Chavzayin, how he is left with great sickness, and as he's lying there in his bed, he is murdered by his own people. And Velei Kavru b'Kivro Samlachim, and it describes those who rebelled against him. Their names were Zavod ben Shimas Hamonis, Yehozavad ben Shimris Hamoavis, and we hear about all of this that all this attack and the turn of the kingship over here. So just a few things to bear in mind. One is, why is it that they were killing him? So Rashi explains that this is in vengeance for the killing of Zechariah. He allowed or commanded the killing of Zechariah. So and the rest of the brothers of Zechariah, the children of Yehoyada, so the people would not take that lying down, they ultimately killed him. If you look at the accounts of Melachim and Divrei Hayamim, once again there is a discrepancy. In Melachim it describes how Hazael came out with his armies and Yoash sent out the coffers of Yerushalayim, of Yehoshaphat, and gave the gold, so Hazael went away. In this case it does not describe Hazael arriving, it does not describe Yoash emptying the coffers. There it describes that Yoash was just killed by his servants. Here it describes how he was sick and then killed. So the Malbim says there were two separate battles. The first battle was after the initial allowing his own self-deification. That was the first battle where Hazael himself comes out, Yoash bribes him away, and off he goes. Then when Zechariah was killed, then a second battle ensued. Hazael does not come up this time, and this time the officers come, and they're not going to be bribed. They go into Yerushalayim, and they despoiled, and they injure him mortally, at which point his servants take revenge on him and kill Yoash. It's a very, very sad and terrible story. Unfortunately, the story does not end actually here. The Midrash in Koheles Rabbah, Perek Yud, describes how that when Nebuzadron the Babylonian came to destroy or to besiege Jerusalem, he came and he found this area in the Beis Hamikdash where the blood was bubbling, which was the blood of where Zechariah had been murdered in the Beis Hamikdash, and he asked what was the Tivoy Shel Damze, and nobody could tell him, so he brought sacrifices, Parim Ve'elim, on this area to bring restitution to the blood, and the blood carried on boiling. He didn't know what to do, so what he did was he started killing people. He slaughtered Kohanim and Neviim over the blood, and nothing brought restitution. And ultimately, he shechted the Sanhedrin Katana on it, and it didn't rest. And then the Pirchei Kohuna, the children of the Kohanim, Tinoka Shel Beis Rabban, children from school. And at this point in time, this was the restitution that was talked about, that Zechariah ben Yehoiada himself was looking for. At this point in time, it describes how Nebuzadron himself, seeing this, realized the gravity of even one soul who was killed in a Torah lifestyle, and he himself did hirhurei tshuva and converted. It's a very, very sad story. In fact, if you look out of the Shara Ashpot, the Dung Gate, just by the Kotel, you look down into the Kidron Valley, you'll see there's some huge monuments there. One is called Yad Avshalom, which is where Avshalom is buried, and to the right of that there is Yad Zechariah. That is the burial plot of this Zechariah ben Yehoiada, who is killed in this perek as well. A very sad cycle which begins upon this murder. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.